Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. And now there are 13 recreational marijuana shops in Massachusetts. At least a half dozen more are expected to open in the coming weeks. But the rollout of recreational marijuana in the state has been bumpy. Many say the pot shops are located so out of the way and the product is so expensive that much of the marijuana market remains underground. Joining us to talk more about this is Felicia Ganz, a producer and reporter for the Boston Globe, who covers marijuana. Felicia, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us in studio is Boston City Councilor Lydia Edwards. Thanks so much.
Thank you again for the opportunity.
And listeners, we want to hear from you during this conversation. What do you make of the rollout of recreational marijuana in Massachusetts? Are you buying pot from a shop or are you buying in the underground market? And have pot stores caused any problems in your community? You can call us with your thoughts, your opinions, your questions. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. So, Felicia, let's start with you. The stores were supposed to open in January of last year, but that didn't happen until November. Has that affected the industry rollout overall? Because that's what some folks say. Well, there was such a delay at the beginning that we just haven't caught up yet. Is that what's going on here?
In many ways, yes. I mean, first of all, when you talk about money, when you talk about tax revenue, that obviously has made an impact. Any kind of guesses that we had on how much tax revenue was going to come in last year totally changed when that schedule changed. As far as the rollout and what people are starting to realize brings up a lot of questions. We would have hit these questions, I think, at any point. I think that we would have just come upon them quicker if the stores opened quicker. But a lot of these questions that come with opening a new industry were going to happen anyway.
So what are some of the biggest ones? Tell us what do you think that folks are really grappling with here that's affecting everybody?
The biggest thing that people are talking about, both on the municipality and on the state level, is what we do about social equity and with economic empowerment applicants and how we make sure that we aren't just talking the talk, but that we're walking the walk too, and that we're making it possible for people that want to get into the industry to actually get in. So I'm sure Lydia Edwards can talk a little bit about what her colleagues have been doing in city council, but it's something that state leaders are talking about as well. And here in Boston, it's a lot of the discussion. It's a lot of what Kim Jane in particular is trying to bring to Boston to try to find a solution here. And then we get to these nitty-gritty questions, which is what came up in East Boston last week, is what do the zoning laws mean? And how do we open the industry fast, but without disregarding all of the laws that we've already put into place?
Okay, so how do you deal with all the different zoning laws in different municipalities and make sure that you're doing it right? Is that basically what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in Boston, we might be digging into this a little more, but in East Boston, we last week came upon this zoning law that was not really followed to the note that the mayor's office had initially set it up to be. But at the same time, you know, you have people that really want these shops to be opening and that are complaining that they're not opening fast enough. And that really was at the heart of the effort to just have two shops opening or moving forward in the process at the same time, even though they aren't quite following the zoning laws.
Right. Well, we'll talk about East Boston in just a minute. Let's get to a couple of statewide things first. I read that since the first legal sales in a established shop in November, that retailers have generated, what, about $64 million? Where does that stand in terms of what was being estimated? And is that what folks expected, or what does it look like?
It's definitely lower than folks expected, but a lot of a lot of that comes from the fact that stores didn't open when they were expected to, and so that tax revenue being lower is really just a result of that. There are fewer stores open now in April 2019 than would have been open if they opened at the proper time.
It's not so much that folks are still going underground, because there was another story in the Globe that said about 75% of the marijuana sold in the state will be under the table. Are we getting less money in sales revenue, or seeing less money in sales revenue because much of the market remains underground?
That's absolutely a piece of it, but a lot of it really is accessibility. You know, people are going to, when the closest store to them opens and you're first seeing the market open, people are excited and they're going to go there. But when it comes to actually getting products on a regular basis, people need a place that's accessible, that they can stop on their way home the way that you could stop at a liquor store on your way home from work. And I think that until enough stores open for that to be the case of the majority of people in the state, it's not going to be a regular market for most people.
So you expect that 64 million number will change dramatically once more shops are online and they sort of establish themselves more?
I would expect so.
Okay. And what about also a story in the Boston Globe that big players really are in control to a large degree of the Massachusetts market? The paper found that of a dozen recreational shops that were open at the time the article was published, all but two of them were owned by large out-of-state investors. What does that suggest?
So I will preface this by saying I don't work on the Spotlight team, so I didn't work on that story in particular. But it really does reflect the biggest problem that is at the heart of this, which is that it takes a lot of money to start up these stores. And right now, that money is coming from corporations. It's coming from a lot of out-of-state companies that have already started marijuana industries in other states where it was legalized before us, and that the money that is required to start shops is keeping some small businesses from actually being able to jump up and get off the ground. So it really is just it's a, you know, a small problem that reflects a much bigger issue.
I want to get back to the East Boston issue here, and I want to talk in detail a little bit with City Councilor Edwards. So let's explain a little bit. The fight is between two companies, East Boston Bloom and Berkshire Roots. That's a company based in Pittsfield. And there are two businesses here proposing marijuana shops less than a half mile apart, and that violates the City of Boston's buffer zone for pot shops. But the city did sign host agreements with each of these businesses and then left it up to the East Boston Zoning Board of Appeals to decide.
It left it up to the ZBA. East Boston does not have its own Board of Appeals.
So the Boston.
It went up to the Boston Board of Appeals and kind of they just punted it to them to make a decision between the two of them.
So there was a meeting last week, and we have a little bit of tape here from the acting chair, Mark Ehrlich, who asked a representative from the Boston Office of Neighborhood Services to clarify what was going on here. Let's listen.
Mayor's office is supporting two programs that are less than a half a mile apart.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's what they're saying. Yeah. Apparently that did happen. Berkshire Roots, we should say, did get the approval. And the board says that was because it was listed first
in line.
The agenda.
They were first in line. They are first right before the other one, and as a result, they make decisions on the spot. So several of us lined up to, before they made the decision, to again announce to the ZBA, we have a half-mile issue. So if you're going to make a decision between the two of them, please choose the local option, which is East Boston Bloom. That's owned by half people of color, an Iraq veteran, all of them live in East Boston. They are across the street from the T station. So added to the many issues that you had mentioned before is the top things people are concerned about, not just social equity, it's transportation. It's whether this is going to cause, you know, regular zoning headaches, you know, vagrancy, whether folks are going to just corral around that, but also looking at traffic, which is the number one issue in East Boston right now. I don't know if you saw the reports from the traffic this morning. So it's a very sensitive topic. So here we were, an option, a local business across the street from a T station, Maverick T station, and Berkshire Roots is in front of a bus station, a bus stop, and in order for them to have deliveries of their product, they would actually be blocking the bus stop. To me, there was a clear analysis which one was best, but they got in line first, like most corporations can.
And that's it? It's that simple? They got in line first?
Does
the city have any sort of...
The city should have, before they, when they made the decision about the HCAs, the host community agreements, they have one office of emerging industries. That person is the only person making the decisions about who's getting HCAs. And so when they were making that decision, they did know, and they admitted that they knew that the two were too close to each other. So in that case, that should have precluded one from getting an HCA. There was another corporation that's actually further away that could have easily gotten an HCA. They have a medical dispensary license right now, and they were hopeful to get it, and they didn't get an HCA at all. What this to me is not endemic of, this is a symptom of this mess that we're in is a symptom of the fact that we have not prepared as a city how to honestly deal with this emerging industry. Mm-hmm. We need a neutral board of individuals that are arm's length from everyone, that can make these kinds of decisions, do the measurements, look at real estate, look at zoning, look at all of these different things, and then issue the HCAs.
Because right now, people are not neutral. And people are getting favors.
Well, that's what happens when you don't have a transparent process. The assumption, people immediately go to the assumptions. They're looking at donations made to the mayor from Berkshire Roots. They're looking at, they're assuming that there's a favoritism, whatever ism is coming up, because people don't know what the process is. It is not transparent. We do not know how entities are weighed. We do not have a point system, for example, which is what is proposed in Councilor Janey's ordinance. We do not have several people in expertise in substance abuse and, as I mentioned before, zoning, a cartographer who could do the measurements. We don't have any of those individuals at the table.
But, you know, some folks listening, they might be thinking, well, yikes, it took so long to roll this out. You know, maybe I didn't follow the minutiae of this, but why don't we have some of those steps? Why do you think that municipalities have been, and the state really, has been caught off guard in not having sort of a clear process by making sure that this went through smoothly?
I can say, you know, I can't really speak to why the municipality didn't do it. I can say that lack of preparation, to me, sometimes indicates lack of prioritization. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're still dealing with the fact that it's legal, and a lot of people do not like that it's legal. I don't know if that's really what's going on in the administration's head. I think ultimately that it not being an efficient process is an equity issue. And what happens usually when things are befuddled and messed up, and then now there's an added step, and now there's really an armaments race, right? So now we're kicking it and see who can exist first. Who's going to win those races? Who can move faster than a local business? Always the corporations. We've actually made it more unequal because now we're interpreting the law in such a minutia. And by the way, it didn't come from the administration, the half-mile buffer. It came from the city council. And so for the administration to then take an ordinance that we as a city council put through to read it in such a, you know, legal gymnastics of existing entities, great. So if I'm a corporation and I'm looking at this hot market of Boston, I will go wherever I want. I know I can exist faster than those local businesses. Mm. So this has actually hurt people. It's made it harder now for local businesses, for equity empowerment applicants to exist. And again, it's not as though this is not all doom and gloom. This is not something that we can't learn from. This is not something we can't correct. You know, there's a viable solution from Councilor Janey to set up a neutral board. We have a licensing board for liquor. We have, when we're looking at doling out millions of dollars from the city of Boston, we actually have a committee for CPA. We allow many hands to be in the process, so for transparency and efficiency's sake. This should be no different than other new things. CPA was once new. It is efficiently moving out. Liquor licenses, we have a board to combine the two. I think we're headed in the right direction. We just need to get there.
Right. I just want to bring Felicia back into the conversation for a second. Felicia, you've reported that the mayor's office can waive this buffer zone requirement and grant variances for both of these applicants. Do you think that's what's going to happen here?
It's hard to say, and it's also hard to say exactly whose role that is, and I think that was part of the confusion last week, is the ZBA trying to figure out if we're reading this as existing businesses only, then theoretically they can't grant a variance until one of them exists. But then, you know, as Councillor Edwards pointed out, that puts the second one to open, or the third or fourth or fifth, at the disadvantage of having to go back to the ZBA and request that variance. So the question is also setting this precedent of at what point in the process should that, whether it's a variance or a waiver, who does it come from? When should it happen? And a lot of people do think that it should have come straight from the mayor's administration and pre-signing the host community. It should have been agreed upon that they are acknowledging that they're within the half mile and that they are taking care of that before it goes to any kind of regulatory board.
Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure we get some listeners in the conversation and remind listeners that if you'd like to join us, if you have a thought, if you have a question or your opinion on the rollout of recreational marijuana, you can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. I want to go to Jean, who's calling from Arlington. Jean, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to call in and weigh in on the cost of things. Mm-hmm. I had recently been in Colorado in February and visited a recreational shop there, and I've had legal recreational marijuana for a few years. And the prices were, I'd say, today I looked at the prices at the Brookline shop, and they're about 3 to 4 times the price.
Three to four times?
So, for example, a hand roll at the shop I went to in Colorado was $3.50. And the same type of thing at the Brookline shop was $12.
So
I might have that information wrong, but that's from their website.
Mm-hmm. So you think the prices are much higher here, and that's what might be affecting business?
Well, I do believe that demand, you know, and supply, and I'm hoping once more shops open that maybe the prices will go down. But that's kind of a high price.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Comparatively.
All right. Jean, thanks so much for the call. Another call here is from Saladin from Fitchburg. Saladin, you're on the air.
Yeah, basically, Jean said what I was thinking. Basically, these pot shops are committing highway robbery right now. It's I went there once, and that's probably going to be the last time I go for some time. It's like your local guy has much better prices and very comparable quality. Mm-hmm. But basically, yeah, she said what I was thinking.
So basically, if you want marijuana, what do you do, Saladin?
Well, there's the local guy, and then there's the pot shop 30 miles away, which charges an arm and a leg for the same exact product of comparable quality. My local guy has brand name stuff. They've got brand name stuff. So why would I drive that far to pay 3 times the price, like, for example, a cartridge? $90 for a gram versus about $45 with my local guy. So
double.
You can't justify that.
So, but the whole point of this was, I mean, a lot of this, the argument anyway of legalizing recreational marijuana was that if it was legalized, it would be regulated, so you would know what you were getting. So your guy might have the same stuff that's in a regulated store, but in the regulated store, they have to prove that that stuff is what they say it is, where your guy doesn't necessarily have to.
Well, but I know where my local guy gets his stuff. I just don't have that same access. That's why I go to him.
Mm-hmm.
It's sealed. It's a sealed product. I mean, it's not like he's filling these things in his backyard or something. This is a sealed product he's getting from out of state. Mm-hmm. So I know the quality that I'm getting.
Mm-hmm. I see. All right. Well, Saladin, thanks so much for your call. I want to bring another voice into the conversation here because it looks like we're hearing from some consumers, and we have consumers on hold here who want to weigh in, particularly about the cost. Kamani Jefferson is with us. He's president of the Massachusetts Consumer Recreational Council. Kamani, I'm wondering, when you hear this, is this a common complaint that you're hearing about the prices that are being charged in Massachusetts in particular, and how it might be affecting the industry here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm based in Dorchester in Boston, and a lot of folks in that area, they're still going to their local person because of price and accessibility. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of why at the Massachusetts Recreational Consumer Council, we kind of came together because we knew consumer power is going to be important, and, you know, quality, costs, all those things that consumers care about, and it's why they're making the choice between going, you know, do a legal source or getting it from the person they've been getting it before the legal source was even there.
Why is it 2-3 times higher in Massachusetts? Why would that be?
Like you said, I think 13, there might be 14 stores, I think, total open. And they're, I think, maybe a little over like 110, 120, could be wrong, provisional and final licenses total. Mm. Versus you're talking about Colorado and California, those are much more robust markets in terms of how many stores. In Denver alone, I think there's like 500-600 stores. I could be, or even in California, there's like, you know, thousands of stores across the state. So legal access is important if you expect consumers to actually purchase these products,
right,
or if they have to drive 30 miles it doesn't make sense, especially if they've already been getting it before there was even a legal market.
We've been talking about this case in East Boston with these two marijuana shops, so within the half-mile buffer zone where they're not supposed to be, or, well, they're not yet, but that is essentially what's going on there, and there's a debate about that in East Boston. And Councillor Edwards is in the studio with us, and she basically told us, right, and you can correct me if you think I'm wrong here, Councillor, that the lack of preparation here in terms of how this was going to be handled properly is really an issue, and that lack of preparation leads to a lack of equity in this.
Correct.
Right? So I wonder, Kamani, would you agree with that? Would you say that that's what we're seeing here in East Boston in particular?
Yeah, absolutely. The administration didn't prepare. We have to remember that the mayor was not for this at all. The governor also was mm-hmm. not for this at all. So, you know, that they're following the law to their best they can, but it's not. I think I heard prioritization from Councilor Edwards. It's exactly that. They're not prioritizing this. You know, there's other things that they need to do, that they need to get done in their administration. So, I think it's a little bit of that, like, lack of just wanting to actually do this because it wasn't what they wanted in the first place. And then, in terms of equity, we live in America where you need capital to build these businesses. So if we're talking about poor, low-income minority neighborhoods, if there's no money to go with it, if there's no political organizing to go with it, then, you know, it can just sound good on paper. So we definitely need to make sure the industry supports this, the government needs to support equity, community. There's so many different support systems as needed.
But I'm wondering what could make it change? I mean, anything? I mean, it sounds pretty dismal the way you're describing it. Is there something that could be done to make a change? And when you hear about potential federal action, right, we're hearing about potential changes in terms of banking or federal marijuana reform. Would that do anything?
It would help. I think the banking, it's hard for anyone in the industry, whether you're an equity applicant, you know, whether you're black or brown, it's hard to go to the bank no matter what you look like to get in a bank account. So that would help the industry overall, the banking situation. I think also just different partnerships, private public partnerships, the industry in the state law, you need to have a positive impact plan and a diversity plan in as a part of the regulations. So the commission's really starting to hammer down and making sure those plans are actually adequate enough and are compliant with the regulations. So I think some of these bigger applicants, these general applicants, need to play a part, whether it's supporting financially or educating folks on the industry. There's so much information in this industry, and it really would help if some of the bigger players who have succeeded that can come back and help the little guy.
So what do you think? Why are we getting it wrong here?
Why are we getting it wrong? It's still stigmatized, so it's still a culture thing. Even the West Coast, you know, California got medical cannabis in 1996 versus, I think, the first East Coast state was, you know, maybe mid-2000s or later than that. So it's just... it is kind of a cultural thing, here in the East Coast. And in terms of equity, I mean, again, it's a capitalist society we live in here in America. If we want more diverse applicants and more diverse licenses, we really need to figure out how we're going to fund them. And there's a lot of alternative ways, whether it's crowdfunding, whether it's, you know, talking to credit unions. Credit unions seem to be really open to this industry. And, you know, they're kind of like financial cooperatives. So I think there's just alternative ways of doing business, alternative ways of organizing. Collaboration is very important. And Councilor Edwards said it. Transparency would really help. There's a lot of questions. People don't know where to go for a lot of information.
Kamani, what does the East Boston case say to you?
Oh, man. That the mayor of Boston isn't... let me choose my words correctly here. He's not looking at the full picture of what cannabis could look like for the city of Boston. There's no like multi-year plan, five-year plan. The administration has really sat down and tried to break this down because it's a lot. There's a lot of moving parts. So it just doesn't seem that the strategy is there, the planning is there, proper decision-making is there. It just doesn't seem... that this is being taken that seriously.
Councilor Edwards, any activity on the city council level then, if there is a lack of preparation, to try to make sure that Boston, at least, would be better prepared to deal with things like this in the future?
Yeah, I look to the leadership of my colleague, Councilor Janey. She's proposed an ordinance that builds equity into the emerging industry of into the emerging cannabis industry from the very beginning. She pulls back. She sets up a rubric and makes sure that the key players and stakeholders are at the table to make neutral, you know, well-informed, transparent decisions on a point system to make sure that everyone is very clear how you stand in line with what capital you come with. We all know how you'll be judged, and making sure that there's a certain time frame around that. And I want to be clear, I am not supporting, you know, already doing away with the buffer zone. I believe that rules and equity can coexist. But what happens when you don't follow the rules is actually you become less equal. So I think that at the end of the day, the city council has a role to play in this. I think as long as we pull this out and more people are at the table to deal with this in Boston, we can actually be what the mayor had said we would be, which is a national leader in equity. We're not right now. And that's in part due to the fact that the administration messed up in this case in East Boston.
All right. Well, we are out of time, but I want to say thank you to Boston City Councilor Lydia Edwards. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Also with us was Felicia Gans, a producer and reporter for the Boston Globe who covers marijuana for the paper. Felicia, thank you.
Thank you.
And Kamani Jefferson, president of the Massachusetts Recreational Consumer Council. Thanks to you as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.